Hey, it's Josh McDermott from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Girl Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
And I'm the Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 84. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback to join the conversation.
If you want to give us feedback on the show, you can send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. You can go to our website to give us voicemail feedback at thewalkingdeadgirl.com/voicemail. And you can post a comment on our website or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast. We routinely read feedback and play some audio comments on the show.
Before we get started, I want to remind you all that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show. So obviously, there will be spoilers. So make sure you've watched the current episode before listening, as usual.
And what an episode this was. One of the most gruesome and violent
This is one of my favorite episodes, I think, because Carol is such a badass in this episode, and it was really well, I think, choreographed, well filmed, well timed. Everything was really well done. Like, it was like very meticulously planned, and it worked really well, I thought.
Yes, and it gave, I think, everyone what they needed to see, I guess, with what happened. I mean, Carol did what was expected of Carol, you know?
Yeah. It basically, this is what the evolution of Carol has got her to. This is the place that Carol has gone to because of everything she's been through. And she can do all that stuff because she understands the stakes. The stakes are incredibly high, which other people don't seem to understand because they're Alexandrians and because he's Morgan. Yeah, this episode was basically a Morgan and Carol episode, I think.
Yeah.
Just sprinkled in with a little bit of Enid.
Enid, who came in from, we found a little bit about her backstory. So that's interesting. And we need to talk about that to find out, maybe, do we know a little bit more about Enid and, you know, where she came from and what's going on with her? There's a lot of speculation that, she's a spy or something like that. So we'll discuss a little bit about that. And, we also have some, voicemail feedback. We asked,
everybody wants their t-shirts.
Some people are getting t-shirts today. So we're going to play some voicemail feedback, which is awesome. And we'll run through the show. So let's get started. And the beginning starts off. So when we start off with seeing the backstory of Enid. So let's walk through that. What did you think of that?
I'm really glad we finally got to see the backstory of Enid. And I'm a little sad that Enid had to go, because it seemed like she's not coming back this season. I don't know. She looked like she left, which is sad because I thought Carl was going to get like a romantic interest, even though I didn't like Enid because I'm very protective over Carl. I still liked their story because it gave Carl something to do in the show other than just protect Judith, you know?
Yeah.
It made him have some dialogue with other kids. I mean, of course, now he's going to be able to work with Ron a little bit more, hopefully putting him in his place. But I thought it was very cool how we got to see Enid's story, and it was very sad from like when her parents died to when she's on her own to like all the time she's like survived something. And
what do you think of the eating of the turtle?
I thought that was really sad. And like everybody else, I was bothered more about the eating of turtle than the killing of like people in Alexandria, just because it was so gross and the sound effects, just like Walking Dead always has these great sound effects when stuff happens.
So much chewing noises.
I know. But I thought she did a really good job, and I thought it was a good sequence. And JSS, I was like, what the heck does that mean?
So we now know what it is.
But now I know. Well, yeah, but before you could kind of assume that, okay, every time she survived something, she would say just JSS.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Predictions were, you know, something conspiracy.
Some kind of mantra.
Some kind of conspiracy from some people, but other. I just thought it was, yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it just meant just stand still or something.
No, just survive somehow.
Yeah, I know, just survive somehow. But what I, What I was here. Guessing was like it was just stand still or something, so mm-hmm. that like the walkers can't hear you or something. I can't see you. Don't make any noise. Just stay silent.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And then I finally she puts the JSS on her hand, mm-hmm. which is like she survived and she made it. I was gonna be so upset if she turned around and left. Really? Like, remember how she turned around and she was like not gonna go in there? Why do you think she didn't want to go in at first? Was she scared?
I think it was more because you know, I think it was more like a wild animal who's scared of. You know what I'm saying?
Society for the first time.
You're so used to living on your own and surviving mm-hmm. that you kind of get detached from people.
And it's hard to...
And it's hard to reconnect
yeah.
with society. And I think that's... There was something of that going on. So maybe she was afraid to face people again or something, you know? It could have been that.
That could be it. There's some people who have said that Enid's part of the wolves.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you agree with that statement?
Okay, let's get that out of the way because that's a running theme in all of our comments on Facebook and everything. That Enid's a spy, first of all,
mm-hmm.
and then she was sent there to infiltrate the wolves. It's an interesting theory because a lot of people are saying that just survive somehow means, you know, just any way, even if it means, you know, teaming up with the wolves and betraying people. Mm-hmm. But from what I saw, the wolves attacking, they don't seem that smart.
They don't seem that planned.
They don't seem that... I mean, in previous episodes, they showed that they're kind of smart because they had the trucks and they had some trap where they were trapping people.
I mean, I do believe they are smart, just not smart enough.
They're not that conniving and deceiving and...
And on sneaky. Top of that, I think what dismisses the theory that she is part of the wolves is the end when Aaron finds the bag that he left when he was escaping, and we see all the pictures. We see all that.
That's what brought them there.
That's what brought them there.
It's the photographs, which also, not Enid.
Exactly, exactly. And Enid didn't give anything away that she was part of the wolves at all.
No.
And on top of that. It makes me question, like, okay, how long did the wolves know? Did the wolves know that?
I think the wolves were around for a while. And but then
how did they know about Alexandria?
Them.
Because they didn't find that backpack until probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. And you would have to assume they collected those walkers in that quarry for longer than that, right?
I don't think they did I don't think they were responsible for the quarry walkers.
You don't think so?
No.
But they had one of the big pickups that ran into the wall, remember?
Well, they could have gotten it from that other place that they had the trucks, remember? With the alarms?
Oh, yes. That's true. The grocery store.
Yeah, they could have gotten it from there.
That is very true.
Because there was a bunch of trucks. And I'm thinking there could have been walkers in that truck, too. But they didn't really show anything. They didn't show any walkers in the truck. But I'm assuming there could have been, potentially.
Yeah. Well, then that would be another governor, and they don't want to do that.
They don't want to redo that scene.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wouldn't be surprised if there were in the next episode, like they open up the truck and it's like, oh, there's walkers in here, by the way.
Yeah, that'd be funny because then it'd be like Shane opening the door for season two of the barn.
Yeah. So I don't think Enid is a spy. I think she just happened to be in that situation. That's about it.
Yep, and she left. She saw that this wasn't going to work and she left. And I think it's very interesting. She's by herself. Like, she just lives in the house by herself. Or does she live with someone?
Does she? I don't know.
No, we never got to see who she lives with.
I know there was one scene a few episodes ago where she was in a room somewhere and there was some kids there. Like, they were hanging out in a room.
Oh, that was Ron and Cookie Boy and Jesse's house. Yeah. I don't know his real name. Is his name Sam?
I think it's Sam, yeah. Sam okay. The Cookie Boy.
And the next... And the next scene, we have Carol talking. Okay, this is my favorite scene. Well, part of my favorite scene. Carol's talking to some of the Alexandrians in the pantry about, you know, how they're making miracles happen in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that Carol remembered all these recipes after like a couple of years, which makes her really good at what she does, this whole like facade she's putting on. And well, Carol says, I've made miracles happen with water chestnuts. And one of the ladies are like, Miss Peltier. What is it? How do you say her last name?
Peltier.
Peltier, you are an honest to goodness hero, Shelly.
Some foreshadowing there.
That's true.
She's a hero.
That lady didn't even say honest to God. She said honest to goodness. Oh my goodness. See, choices, man, choices. Then you'd be stuck with something that smells like paprika. No, thank you.
That's where Carol gives her the stink eye.
You're like, are you kidding me? And then Shelly's like, I want my noodle machine maker.
So she's the one that wants the noodle
machine. At the beginning
machine.
When they had that like little powwow.
Yeah, where...
I want to look for a noodle
machine. Aaron and his friend, what was the other guy? His friend's name.
His partner.
His partner's name. I can't remember his name. But he was saying, yeah, Mrs. Niedermeyer wants her pasta maker. Did you guys find that?
Right.
Like, really? We're looking for the pasta maker now?
You know, and then Carol does something interesting. She really offers a moment of honesty and says, look, I can teach you how to make pasta with your bare hands, but you have to promise not to smoke in the house. It's a disgusting habit that will kill you. So I was surprised she was so forward about her habit.
About the cigarette?
Yeah, smoking, but it's kind of like it. It's kind of what you need to do in order to get people's attention. You got to traumatize them a little bit, embarrass them.
She just wanted to jab back at her because of her criticizing her cooking.
Mm-hmm.
About the paprika. Mm-hmm. This is funny. We see later on that Carol gets rid of this facade right away when she has to, which is good. So,
and people are worried like, oh no, she won't be able to put it back on. But everybody that was paying attention is dead now. So there's that.
And I don't know if she needs to. Honestly, I'm kind of tired of that. I mean, it's kind of interesting and funny, but... How can you live like that too? Like Carol must be having weird mental things going on in her head right now. Especially with all that happened.
Exactly. I don't know. We'll see how she deals with it. But we already see that it started to take a toll on her. Not the disguise, but the killing.
Mm.
Starting to have its effect on her. And I have some theories for the theme later on at the end of the show. But we'll talk about it then.
Okay. About Carol and her killing?
Yeah. Carol and Morgan.
So Carol walks up to Cookie Boy.
And it's basically like dad basically said, I love this. Your dad used to hit you and then he got himself killed. It happened. Now it's done. You live with it or you will let it eat you up.
Why?
What possessed her to say that at that time?
Why did you talk like that about my dad?
Stop it.
Well, I think because the kid was pouting and stuff.
Let the kid pout. His dad died, man. What's up with people not letting each other grieve? But it's true, you know, it happened and now you gotta live with it.
I think it's Carol. I think it's Carol trying to
toughen him up.
Well, impose her views on him, on everyone around her.
And I think Carol's doing a better job of teaching Sam basically being a parent than Jesse is to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jesse's busy with Ron.
Well, and also you notice that she's not putting on a facade when it comes to...
Exactly. Like, that facade has disappeared a long, long ago from when she basically told him that she would kick him out of the wall and make time to a tree and let walkers eat him.
Yeah.
No one will hire him. So it's kind of like, it's been destroyed and now it's only being kept up. And I find it fascinating that Sam just doesn't tell his mom about Carol, but Ron tells his mom about...
Rick.
Yeah. Well, I guess Ron has a reason too, because Rick killed his dad. But you know,
yeah,
that's neither here nor there.
So she does. So she's not putting on this facade with him. And I think it's Carol trying to. She later on, I think she breaks down because of that relationship with Sam. Because at the end,
she sees a stamp on the
which Sam put there and stuff.
Can we talk about the A for a little bit?
Okay.
So we've seen the A. On the boxcar at Terminus.
That was a Terminus thing.
I know it's a Terminus thing, but then why is it occurring again at Alexandria? I still think that the A means Alexandria, right? Do you think so?
I don't think it means anything. Honestly, I think it's just a symbolism, but it doesn't really mean anything to anybody.
Yeah, I don't think it means anything because, one, it already meant something from Alexandria. Two, the other reason... Carol looked at the A was because it reminded her of Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say that it A for the Scarlet Letter because it's with this adultery and Sam kissed a married woman. I mean, not Sam. Rick kissed a married woman. And so I'm like, that's so really? Far-fetched. Yeah.
Rumors. Well, not rumors, but some people post on Facebook that A means is a mark to say to the wolves, "Don't touch this house. It's been marked."
Oh wow.
I don't know. That doesn't make sense because that's the different house. I don't know.
Exactly. And Sam put it there, and he's only a kid, and he's not part of the wolves. The way back to the drawing board. Are you recording?
Yeah.
So I still don't know what A means. I truly think it's just a symbol of, in this episode at least, for Carol to see that, wow, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to live this maybe dual personality or this multiple personality. I don't think she knows who she is anymore. She lost herself
in the character. Method acting, man.
Because she was complaining about the cigarette and then she was about to pick up a cigarette and smoke it, right?
And I remember she used to smoke before this, right?
Oh, she did?
I think she did.
Oh. Did she smoke? I don't remember, to be honest, if she smoked before.
Never smoked in like the show, but before the apocalypse. Did she smoke when she was with her husband?
Yeah, I don't know. But
she just wanted to smoke. Usually people who act like that with cigarettes have been smoking before. Like there were smokers.
Yeah. So maybe she cut that out of her life and now it kind of,
at this point, it's like,
what the hell? she found the pack and she says, what the heck?
Yeah. So moving on, we see Jesse is trying to get Ron to cut his hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally forgot she could cut hair. So I thought it was weird. And then Ron is like appalled. Like, are you kidding me? I don't want a haircut from you. You just want to try to talk to me about whatever the heck just happened. And I don't want to talk. And I don't know why he doesn't want to talk. You kind of need to talk that through about your father just died in a very, very controversial way. That's very confusing to your two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's going to kind of affect you in some way. We need to talk about it. And, you know, Ron is like, no, I'm not going to talk to you. And Jesse asks him, like, why are you so hateful and resentful towards me? Do you blame me for his death? Do you blame me for talking to Rick about our problems?
And what do you think about that part where she says, raise your hand above your head?
I loved that because it really just showed, like, your father's the reason why you can't raise your left arm. Did you forget that? Like, he beat you so severely that you're permanently injured.
I see.
Tried to prove a point that Ron wasn't a good guy. Also proving to us that Jesse really didn't care or doesn't care as much about the loss of her husband as the kids do, but understands and sees the reason why they need to talk about it. And, you know, Ron realizes she got him there. And then Jesse continues to say, the father was dangerous. And then Ron is like, well, Rick is dangerous. And then Jesse's like, well, Rick's my friend. And I find that interesting because she paused before saying friend. Not like, oh, pause, like, I don't know what we are. But like, she needs to think about, yeah, Rick is my friend because he has taught me these things. And yes, we are in a very sticky place right now, but he's taught me a lot, even though I don't like to admit it to him.
Yeah. So, and you know, as an adult, she can understand, she can kind of put everything in context and kind of realize where she's been and where things are going.
Yeah. And kind of suck it up.
No. And yeah. And she can kind of figure things out and she's realizes that,
who's her friend?
It wasn't really Rick's fault. Basically, it was the situation, and Rick was there and kind of woke her up from that, right? Because it wasn't she'd be stuck in that really weird situation still and hiding from her husband all the time.
Their kids would still continue being hurt, and as a mother, you don't want that. So sacrifices.
So she put everything into context and says, you know, and just like in the previous episode where she told Rick, you know, I'm good. I'm going to teach my kids what to do and everything. So she's got a good...
And she's becoming really a team player. And it's something that's great because you've kind of see that already the whole episode. Like, it comes to... It's a lot... Her change into realizing she needs to do what she has to do to survive is probably one of the quickest I've seen. Because, like, right by the end of the episode, she's already stabbing people to death like a pro.
Yeah.
You know? Taking on that same kind of crazy quality that you have in order to survive.
Yeah. Which is good because that means she'll be a better partner to Rick.
There you go.
A good team.
Mm-hmm.
And then just before everything blows up, we see Maggie talking to Deanna about starting a farm. It's like, here we go again, another Herschel.
Well, it's smart. You have to think about it. It's really smart. And I forgot that Maggie could do that because she was... There's so many good things about Rick's group. There's so many different diversity kind of like talents and skills that we forgot about. I'm like, oh yeah, Maggie can grow a farm. See, they do need them. Not just for violent needs, but for practical reasons too. And they want to start... Maggie's goal in this episode and probably for the next couple of episodes is to make sure that Deanna is still the leader that she is. Even though technically Rick's the leader, people still look up to Deanna for the most part. And basically she's telling her, look, we can start a life here and continue to grow just like I know your husband wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And you need to have strength because the town needs her. And that kind of helped Deanna, I think. What do you think?
It helped her. And like we said previously, Deanna's in this weird stupor, this cloud.
She's still breathing like super hard.
Yeah, she's still walking around in this cloud that, you know, she doesn't know what to do. She still doesn't. And she's, she needs to come out of that because the people, whoever's left, whoever hasn't been killed.
Still needs her.
Still needs her.
Even though they realize Rick is not as bad as they think, so they can rely on both of them now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a scene where Eugene and Tara are talking. They're best friends now.
Yeah, and Eugene says, it hams my biscuits.
I don't understand.
Which means that he's just upset. Well, because they want to make a church or something. I thought they had a church, by the way, but I guess, I don't know.
They do, but I think it's probably like maybe burned down a little bit.
Yeah. So they want to make a church, and he's complaining that, well, why do we make a church out of it? Because we can do so many other things with it.
Yeah, why
waste it? Yeah. To him, it's kind of a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get introduced to this new character called Denise. She's apparently a doctor.
And she's the new doctor because, you know, the other one died. So they really quickly replaced him with Denise, who is actually... what is she? A psychiatrist?
She says she practiced medicine, so
she went to med school, but she got her psychiatry degree instead of her medical degree because she gets panic attacks.
Which is great, I guess.
Hey, you know, and I liked their banter. I feel like Denise and Eugene are going to get along really well
because they're both similar.
Yeah, they're both very similar, have similar personalities or coward-like tendencies as well. Eugene is like, you're a doctor. And Denise is like, are you? Like, the snappiness, I love it because it gets Eugene.
And then he's like, touche.
Exactly. Somebody has matched his
wit.
Exactly. And, you know, once Tara started feeling dizzy, Denise immediately helped her out.
Do you think do you think that's like an aftermath of what she went through? Of her getting knocked out and stuff?
Mm-hmm. She's been walking around too much.
Attack.
Getting too tired. She's still recovering. You have to understand. She's still recovering from happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds you that all of this takes place in a matter of days.
Yeah. The fact that she's walking around and stuff is kind of a miracle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Denise character. And we get introduced how, you know, she's scared and she doesn't know what to do. And we see that coming up later when she has to do something. So that's a problem.
There's a line that Eugene says, it's possible if you miss a hematoma. What's hematoma? What's that?
Some kind of brain injury. Some brain problem.
Oh, like I can't kill you. It's possible if you miss a hematoma.
Because if you're dizzy and it's something related to the brain, I guess.
You don't find it.
So we have to Google hematoma now?
No, it's fine. It's fine. I understand. Are you seriously Googling it?
Yeah, it's a solid... swelling of clotted blood within the tissue. So it will probably give you dizziness.
More detailed. Okay.
And we see a confrontation with...
Gabriel and Carl. And I think Carl's being way too nice to Gabriel. But I did like the attitude he was giving him at first. It reminded me the same way that Rick said no to Gabriel when he said he wanted to help. Like a little kid.
He's raising his hand like, can I help? No.
No. Anyway, like I loved it. Like, no. Stop talking. So Carl's walking Judith, and Judith is so adorable. And I swear the baby looks like different every time.
I know.
And he sees Enid and Ron together because Ron is probably seeking, you know, some sympathy from Enid, and Enid hugged him, but it's kind of, and looked at, and looked eventually at Carl, but it looks like, oh my God, this guy is such a sissy. He needs to grow up.
You think Carl was saying that to his head and said,
no, Enid was maybe communicating it to Carl. Like, don't worry. This is not what you think. It's just, this kid is a baby. That's what I felt like, because Ron is so not prepared, and Enid is, and well, so is Carl.
I'm curious about the relationship between Ron and Enid. It seems like the way they portrayed it in the show, it seemed like that there's some secret.
It's not romantic at all, I think.
Well, it seems like there was some secret, like Enid and Ron know something, and they don't want to tell people.
I think they're just kids.
Maybe I'm just looking into it too much.
That's a possibility, but I don't think so. I don't think so.
And that's what kind of drives other people's imaginations as far as the conspiracy about Enid being a spy, because they're like, well, maybe Enid and Ron kind of know about the attacks, and
they're just kids.
And why would, if they knew, why would the attacker attack Ron, right? That makes no sense.
Exactly. And so Gabriel has his moment where he said, you know, it's about me, it's not your group, I'm ready to learn now. Basically in that line, he's basically saying, look, you know, I was wrong about you guys, that all the things I said were really things about myself, and you are not the next coming of hell. You know, like, I was wrong, and I'm ready to learn how to survive and learn how to be a functional member of society, you know?
And he wants to learn,
He wants to learn. And at first I was like, thought Carl's going to be like, okay, bye. But he basically said, you need to tell everybody what you said about, you know, taking back how the group isn't bad and clear their names, because he had a hand in the suspicion. But you can come around 3, we'll start learning with the machete. So he's basically going to help teach him how to survive, which is very big of Carl to do. Carl could have been like, no, and be a kid about it and be like, go away.
Yeah, because he took it from his dad, you know.
Yeah, and Carl's like, I understand. If you want to learn, I'll teach you, because we need all the hands we can get.
Yeah, Carl was trying to teach him at the church, back at the other church, remember? Way back.
I like how Carl's is taking on so much more responsibility, like, no problem. Just like Rick. He has this huge heart, and he knows how to help people.
So then all hell breaks loose when Carol puts her roast on the timer. Yeah.
And she's looking out the window, and she sees Shelley smoking. She took up the advice and smoked outside and not inside. And then all of a sudden, this guy with a machete hacks her open. And at first I thought, is this really happening? I thought it was
a fantasy scene or something.
Yeah, I thought I wasn't seeing something right, because I felt so, the way they filmed it was like, we're looking out the window. It's like we're watching something we weren't supposed to see, or we're watching something that, oh my gosh, we can't believe it's happening. And I really liked it, because it gave me that feeling. And, you know, the guy hacks her stomach open and then her head. And it's like, what is going on? They just killed the character again. Oh my gosh. And I like how they established her character before. So we had a more, became more brutal when they actually attacked her.
Yeah.
Because it's like, we just had a conversation with her. And then we have a shot.
But it was also people that we didn't care about.
Yeah. I mean, you don't care about them, but you still, like, it still gets you, because it's like, oh, well, at least the first one did. The rest of them, I didn't really have an emotional connection to.
Right.
But the first one definitely did. And the next scene, we have Maggie and Diana outside the wall, still talking about farms.
Diana,
sorry. You have Diana here.
Diana. Who's Diana? Oh, yeah.
Diana. They hear screaming. They're like, what the heck's going on? And she's asking Richard, what's going on? He's like, I don't know. Because he's
Why was he facing the wrong way? The guy was facing
He was looking inside the Alexandria, because stuff is going on inside.
No, there was nothing going on inside.
The screams came from inside.
Oh, so he's looking inside and he got it from behind.
Exactly.
He got him a lot of cocktail from behind.
Exactly. He was looking outside because the screams came inside, because, hello, Shelley died. And so I'm pretty sure other people died at the same time. And then he gets caught on fire. And I forgot that Diana hasn't seen all this stuff, because she waits so long watching him burn alive. And Maggie's like, oh, okay, we have to go, and starts leaving. But Diana's like,
she's frozen like a deer in the headlights.
You know, and I love the contrast. I love it.
And she's just standing there watching the guy burn for like a few seconds, and she doesn't move.
because she doesn't know how to react.
She's kind of horrified.
She's seeing all this stuff. And
I just saw someone die in front of me.
Which is something that Maggie and the rest of the group have been seeing forever. So it's nice to see that exact.
Maggie's like, oh, great. Here we go.
Right? Exactly. Now she has to babysit her.
Yeah.
Manages to climb over the wall in the smoke, which is what she also sees, which probably scares the crap out of her. And wolves are running through the streets, hacking people away. They have no weapons, you notice, but I don't notice until they bring up the fact that they have no weapons.
They just have machetes, which is a good thing, because it could have been worse. Well, I guess it was bad, but I mean, it could have been super worse. Carol goes into stealth mode. She goes into Carol mode. Rambo mode. She goes to Carl, stay home, protect Judith, which is the right thing to do.
I love how Carl's like, but I can help, because he knows his role now.
Yeah, well, I think it was the right thing to do. I mean, someone has to stay.
Someone has to stay.
These people are running around, going into people's houses and stuff.
Yeah, come on. Like, their whole purpose is to kill people, so protect yourself.
And then we see a scene where Cookie Boy doesn't want to go home, doesn't want Mom to leave. So they're home, and then Jessie wants to leave.
She wants to go and help, which is another character development for her. Like, she wants to be active.
She wants to go find Ron, I think.
Oh, never mind then.
Yeah, I don't think she wants to participate. I think she wants to find Ron. So they hear some breaking glass and they say, oh, someone's in the house. So they just go in
and hide in the closet, which has been already fitted with the lock because, you know, thanks to their husband, you can thank him in this moment.
Because they locked themselves in the...
They made it seem like the walkers were in the house when they were in the closet. I remember distinctly.
They weren't walkers. They were...
I know, but we didn't know that when we were watching the trailer.
All right. So Jessie has a gun, which is a good thing, which is interesting. I don't think she had a gun before, right? I don't think she had, she wasn't walking around with a gun before.
No, she was.
They can
use weapons in that building now, and she's been training with Rosita, so she probably had a gun on her or around her at the time.
Which is good.
Uh-huh.
And then we see a scene.
Seriously, I'm so glad they passed the law, I like to say. To have guns on you, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be able to
pass the law.
I feel like they're passing the law, like sign the law that you can't.
Deanna said you can now carry guns.
Can now carry guns. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So let's listen to this audio clip.
Let's do it.
Hi.
I'm just luck.
I have these. Didn't want them to have them. And I wanted to say goodbye.
Okay, watch the back door. Tell me if you see him coming.
I'm not staying.
You're not going anywhere. Sit down. You're helping me protect Judith. They're not getting inside this house. I'm not gonna let them. Did you see him?
They're just people. This place is too big to protect. There are too many blind spots. That's how we were able to.
And they got in the walls. But they're gonna die. All of them. Don't tell me goodbye.
Okay. I won't.
So this is very interesting because we get to see what Enid's motivations are and Carl's motivations are. Her mindset is they're just people. They can't hurt us. That's kind of contradicting.
Not they can't hurt us.
No, this is kind of contradicting.
They're not walkers.
They're just people. They're not walkers. This place is too big to protect. There's too many blind spots. This is how we're able to escape, basically, like get out and do stuff. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think it's kind of a giving up mentality, I think.
She's too quick to run. And Carl's like, they got on the walls. They're going to die. Like, that's like a Carl. That's like a Rick line. They're all going to die.
They're all going to die.
Exactly.
Definitely a lot of Rick in there.
And you're not leaving just because you think things are getting bad. You obviously don't know what I've been through.
Yeah, this is just the beginning.
Exactly. This massacre. Is not as bad as a thing as you think. There's still hope. You can't just give up just because you get scared. That's also another cowardly kind of thing. And that's, yes, Enid is had to survive like Carl and the group, but obviously she hasn't known or been around enough to understand that you can't give up and you have to fight.
Right.
Because that's one step away from just giving up on life and killing yourself.
I think it sounds more like a giving up kind of thing, and also that she's like, well, that's life. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm just going to run, you know.
Okay, when you run, then what? Yeah. What the group understands is that you can run and run all you want, but you will never be able to live.
You got
to
stay together.
And they want to live.
You got to stay together with other people.
And they want to live. They want to have a life. They want to build a life for themselves, just like everybody else. Every other human being on the planet.
Yeah.
And just surviving is not enough for them anymore. But with Enid, it is. You know, she's not quite there yet. Yes, she's better than the Alexandrians, but she's not as great as the group yet. And, you know, I really don't want her to go because she could be a really strong team player. But we'll
see. She has some skills, survival skills.
She has the qualities of a person who can survive.
And so let's clear up this another thing, confusion, because she says, she gets interrupted when she says, that's how we... And people think what she was going to say was, that's how we figured out how to invade you guys.
Oh, my.
That's how we infiltrated you and got in. Basically, that she's part of the wolves. But I think that's wrong interpretation.
No, I think it means that there's too many blind spots. That's how we were able to come and go as we please.
Because as kids, they were in the forest.
Yeah.
Remember they had that tree trunk scene?
Yeah, and the way she said it was like slow, like that's how we were able to, you know, leave.
Yeah, she's so casual about that. Like, she's not even like freaking out or anything. She's like, yeah, I'm gonna leave and I'm just saying goodbye. Like, she's not even worried, not scared, nothing. She's like,
because I guess she wasn't very that invested in this place either.
And that's why people think she's part of the wolves. She's like, well, why isn't she scared? I guess she's with the wolves then.
No, I mean, it's because she doesn't have emotional connections to anything anymore. And she's not in the same boat with the group.
Mm.
She hesitated before she got there.
Yeah.
She always tries to escape and come back. I don't think she ever had a real attachment to this place or understood how great this place is like the group does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just the disconnect from the fear of them attacking was kind of strange to me. Judith is in the other room, hopefully still safe and sound. They didn't show much of her. We saw her at the beginning on the baby monitor.
Well, she's fine because as long as... Well, she's probably upstairs.
Because no one got through the house, so...
Yeah. So we go back to outside where the wolves are killing everyone. And then the
non-stop. So the whole episode, like, we hear people screaming and...
Dying, gunshots, because people finally got their guns. One guy takes blood, put it on their forehead as a W...
Which,
chopping off arms and legs, which I don't understand why they're doing. For when they turn to walkers?
So they're going to have...
just like hacking people?
So they're going to have people that are turned into walkers with no arms and legs?
Well, remember when Noah wanted to go back to his hometown? He went back to his hometown and he saw all these walkers. And we saw the truck of walkers with no arms and legs?
Mm-hmm. That was them.
I think that's showing just the characteristic of the wolves. They're probably going to take these people back and put them in a truck or something.
Yeah, and they wanted us to make the connection that, oh, okay, these are the same people that attacked Noah's town.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They did the weird chopping of limbs thing, which can we... what do we think? That they're just crazy, right? These people are crazy.
I think they truly are a cult. They operate like a cult, like a sadistic cult. They believe there are wolves and they believe they're the second coming, and they have all these ritualistic kind of tendencies, putting W on their forehead, chopping up people strictly. And, you know, there's a time when we'll talk about it later.
One of the wolves confesses something.
Yeah, we hear some things.
So Carol she runs across another... I thought it was Shelley again. I think, oh, this is another Shelley.
No, it's another person.
I was a little confused. I thought, like, why is Shelley dying twice?
No, it's one of the ladies that she talked to in the pantry, though.
Yeah, so it was one of the ladies in the pantry that got slashed by the wolves, and she was obviously dying. She's going to... Nothing they can do about it.
That was a very emotional scene, because here's this woman who's never seen violence in her life, gets stabbed brutally where her guts are falling out of her stomach, and she sees Carol, and Carol's in this getup, and Carol has a knife, and she puts the two together that, oh my God, Carol's going to kill me. Oh my God, I'm going to be dying anyway. I'm so terrified.
Right. The look well, of if you put it that way, geez. You got me terrified now.
Exactly. That's what the feelings were going through. That's exactly what she was going through. God. That's what, right? I know. And so
I feel like crap now.
Exactly. Carol, that's what Carol felt too. She saw all of that, did what she had to do. And that's when she started realizing, wow, this sucks. Mm-hmm. I hate that I have to do this. You know, I can't do this anymore. I know this woman. Yes, she's not, you know, the best kind of person in the world, but she still is a person, and she's innocent in the way that she's naive in the way that a child is. And it's terrible that she had to go through this and die this way.
Yeah.
It could have been prevented if she knew how to protect herself. And, you know, now she has to put her down.
Mm.
And she takes a moment to take that in, you know, after she's done it.
And obviously she didn't say, oh, maybe I should take her to the infirmary. Maybe we can save her. No, obviously not. That's no. Not Carol.
Have you seen this? Have you seen the injury wound? Like,
I know.
That's where all the stuff. That was kind of gross.
We see Deanna's only remaining family member.
I know, right?
The only leftover alive family member is Deanna's son, other son, Spencer. He's in a tower. But he's
a watchdog, he realizes he sucks at his job because he can't freaking shoot.
Yeah, he sucks at shooting people.
And then he's the one that sees the truck ram into the wall, and he's the one that disables the horn before it's too late.
Well, hold on. Let's back up a little bit. He's not the one that disables the horn. This truck
goes to the source of the horn.
The truck runs into the tower. I think Spencer does shoot the truck driver.
Yeah,
because that's why it goes.
No. There was no truck driver.
What?
Because there was a walker inside.
It was the dead.
No one else.
It was the dead truck driver.
And he immediately turned into a walker.
Yeah.
I don't think so. We're gonna have to look at the footage to see how old this walker was, because it did not look like a freshly turned walker. I mean, it would make sense if I could believe it because of the fact that if you turn the worse of a person you were, the faster you turn. But I don't agree with it because it's a tactic to prevent them from getting the horn to stop. Because wasn't the horn being pressed by the walker somehow?
Yeah, but the horn only went off after it crashed into the wall. It didn't start.
They probably rigged it so it could work that way. I mean, they are kind of pretty nifty in that way, so it's not impossible that could have happened. But yes.
So you think they MacGyvered it?
I think they MacGyvered it, yeah. And they put a walker in there to help make it harder, which was harder for Spencer because he's not a trained professional like Morgan is. And first of all, how did Morgan get there so fast if he was with Rick?
He was sent off with Rick to go to the Alexandria.
That was fast with all of
two as a lookout ahead. I don't know because in the previous
episode,
they were
together when the horn went off after Rick had to take down.
Yeah. So by the time they heard the horn and Morgan getting there was super fast. So yeah. Morgan was right there.
Literally. So I don't understand.
Yeah. That was a blooper. How fast could Morgan I thought Morgan was with them. Yeah. Wasn't he?
Exactly. And then if he was, why isn't Rick there too?
Yeah. Wasn't Morgan with Rick?
Yeah.
That is strange. Strange, strange.
So yeah, Spencer hesitates, killing the walker. Morgan's oh my gosh, I will do this.
Yeah. Because he had a knife and he's hesitating, how am I going to kill this thing? And then Morgan says, so are you coming? And then...
Spencer's just being a coward.
Yeah, and then Morgan says, hide.
And hide, prick. Jeez.
So, because he's he assesses the situation. So, okay, this guy's he's not going to be any help.
He's a wuss.
Yeah, so you might as well just hide.
Mm-hmm. And then we go on where Morgan gets confronted by the guy with the axe. Hacking away at people.
Yeah, and we have an audio clip.
And Morgan actually says leave. Okay, just play the clip.
Leave. Please.
Gonna be slow. I could have stopped him.
The others back?
No. It's happening out there.
You're doing it now?
We had to.
These people don't have guns.
I could have stopped him.
If they had guns, they'd be using them.
Did you hear me?
We have to get to the armory before they do. If we keep moving, this might work.
You don't have to kill people.
Of course we do.
Carol! You don't like it.
We're gonna get to the armory, and I need your help.
Basically, that explains the whole how Morgan got there. Or like, not really, but Carol was like, okay, so why are you here? And Morgan's like, we had to do it now. We had no choice. Basically, do the plan today.
Yeah, it doesn't explain how he got there, but it explains that... I think the whole purpose of this scene was to contrast Morgan and Carol. Like
the beginning of contrasting for them.
Two like, viewpoints.
Morgan's like, you don't have to kill them. Carol's like, you don't understand. And yes, we do.
Right, and Morgan says to Carol, you don't like it. And
because he sees that she doesn't like having to do that.
Right, and Carol's thinking is like, yeah, okay, I know I don't, yeah, I, of course I don't like it, but I got to do it.
But I have to do it, yeah.
You know, so I think it's just the two viewpoints contrasting and coming to head to each other and basically... I think Morgan's fighting a losing battle. I think Morgan has to change a little bit, and then Carol has to change a little bit. But I don't know if Carol should change, because she saved a lot of people. She did a lot of stuff there at the Alexandria. So
I mean, I think I don't know. I agree with you. I think she needs to be that person, but she needs to know how to deal with it. Or this is the last time she'll need to be this person. Hopefully.
Yeah, because I think if it goes on...
Because she's doing it all on her own. No one else is killing people.
Well, there were some other people, but not that much, yeah.
It's mostly her.
Yeah.
And because, you know, Tara, Eugene are inside.
Well, there is Rosita and Aaron. They showed a scene with Rosita and Aaron.
Maggie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maggie. So I just think that I think it's... You need to be able to switch it on and off.
Yeah,
which is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's like people going to war, right? When you go to war, you have this this story you tell yourself about why you're there and what you're doing.
Rationalization.
And why it's right.
The bigger picture.
And then when you kill somebody in war, you do it, right? But then you have to come back home and change and become...
Normal again.
Quote-unquote normal. And... It's like, well, you were just in a war zone. You killed like hundreds of people or you blew them up or whatever you did. And then you come back and you have to live this life, this normalcy.
Which is what a lot of soldiers go through.
Yeah, it's tough.
Because it's tough because, you know, how could you be living this life knowing what's out there?
And what you've done. Which, again, kind of like again, you know, you justify it and it's like, okay, well, there's a reason why I did that. Mm. And I think that's how you kind of have to think in this new world. The apocalypse, mm-hmm. Like, yes, you kill these people, so you have to do that at that moment, but that's not who you are. That's not part of your life. You're not a ruthless killer. You're not, like, you know what I'm saying, a murderer.
Yeah.
And then you continue on, and when that's over, then you switch, right? And then you have, so there should be kind of a balance, I think, if it's possible. I don't know. But Morgan is like the extremes, like, no, I'm not going to do any violence whatsoever.
All life is precious.
Yes.
All life is precious. Like, okay.
Which is kind of extreme and doesn't
work.
But
you need to understand that sometimes you got to kill people or you're going to die. I mean, remember? Okay, we'll get there too, but
yeah.
That scene later.
Yeah.
So and then what happens?
Apparently Maggie's still outside.
She's still outside because she's with Deanna. And Deanna, what I like about her is she knows when she's a coward. She says, look, I can't go inside because I'm somebody who needs to be saved. And I don't want to be another casualty or another reason somebody else dies.
Yeah, because someone's trying to save me and then they die.
Exactly. I'm going to stay with my coward son. We're going to be cowards together. So they get in the truck.
She gets in the trunk and there's a long scene where she's staring out the window and closing her eyes and stuff. Well, obviously she's absorbing what's going on because she's hearing screams and everything from the inside, but she's in the truck hiding. So
It's kind of hard for her.
It sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And then we actually, okay, Holly's never been really seen in this episode.
We heard about Holly twice. Holly's in the guard tower. Holly's doing this. Where is Holly? Who's Holly?
Dead now because she's the one that got stabbed.
Who's Holly?
She's the one that got stabbed.
Yep.
And comes to the doctor's office and is the only person that is retrieved from the battlefield with a wound that could be helped. Mm-hmm. But Denise is very scared because she's not a real doctor, and this is why she wasn't a doctor. She has panic attacks. Yeah. And Tara and Eugene are convincing her that, look, you need to suck it up and you need to try. Because if you don't try, this is going to be on your conscience for the rest of your life. Eugene was like, you know what? I understand you, Denise, because I wanted to coward too. I wanted to be a coward at one point. And for some reason that helps her because then she starts trying.
Yeah, and Tara just basically yells at her. Like, you have to try.
That tells her off. Exactly.
You have to try. I don't care. Like, you're the one who has like the most knowledge of anybody here.
So you went to it's a responsibility. It's your duty as a patron of the medical field to do whatever you can to help someone.
Yeah, you have the knowledge, use it.
When I was on the plane back home, this guy, I don't know what happened, but I think he threw up or he was sick or something on the plane because he was in the back. And then the flight attendant is like, if anybody with doctor experience, please come report to the back cabin. This guy.
If anybody knows, like has been doing the whole doctor thing, let us know because that might help.
We need some help. The guy immediately raised his hand and said, "I'm a doctor," and then went over and checked him out. And you know, the guy thanked him later, saying, "Thank you for helping me. Right. I'm just fine. I'm fine though." But yeah, so it's like it's your duty as somebody who can help to help.
Yeah, because saving a life or helping someone is more important than you know fixing a computer or something. I mean, it's like those are powerful skills, and if you can, you should try. You know,
mm-hmm. Exactly. And you work so hard anyway to get the degree, so freaking use it.
It didn't sound like she wanted to be a doctor, though. That's why I think that was the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, no one wanted to be in the apocalypse, but here we are.
Exactly. He was people are supposed to be delivering pizzas.
Exactly. I love that line. And I was supposed to be delivering pizzas. Now suck it up and let's do this.
Right. And then we have the whole Carl and Ron chased scene.
By a knife guy and Carl being like, Carl, and just shoots him. And then Ron is like, oh, snap, this kid means business because he's like, come inside. I can keep you safe, man. And then Ron's like, looks at Enid.
Come to me if you want to live.
Like, oh. And it's like, no, man, I'm not going to go with you because you killed my father. Wah, and leaves. Like, oh my gosh, really suck it up, brother.
Even Enid tells him to come in, right?
Exactly. Like, come on, it's okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, Ron is such a pain in the butt. He's going to be a problem this whole season.
Because it was Carl, which is Rick's son. And, you know, Ron saw Enid and Carl earlier, remember? And he was spying on them and he saw them, you know, together. So he's the whole jealousy thing going on. Exactly. So there's a little bit of that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ron's going to get it, man. He's like a cat with nine lives.
I'm just waiting for it to happen, yo.
There's so many opportunities where Ron could have just bit the dust. I don't know what's going on with this. They're stretching it so far.
For what reason? I have no idea. Just to create more conflict.
Just for drama. And I think they think that Ron is going to change.
He's going to have a revelation.
You know what's going to happen? He's going to have a revelation. He's going to change, and then he's going to die.
Of course. That's how the arcs go in this show.
Right.
You turn into a good person, you die.
Exactly. Okay?
So Ron comes home. Jesse hears it. But she's like, oh my gosh, somebody's in the house. Ron's here. Crap. I need to leave. Mother instinct. Cookie boy, stay here. So she comes out of the closet and sacrifices her own position and spot to tell Ron to stay outside. A woman comes in.
Yeah.
Tackles her. And she takes the scissors that she was about to cut his hair with. And like totally turns on her and just stabs the crap out of this woman.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's a woman because Jessie, yes, she's starting to come into her own, but I don't think she could have handled a giant man that's bigger, twice her size.
Yeah. So they kind of matched it properly.
Yeah. Made it more realistic and believable.
Yeah.
Not saying that women can't fight, just saying that at this point in time,
if it was the big bulky guy with the axe, I don't think she would have taken him out.
Yeah. But I love the acting in this because you could see it in her face and she's totally committed and it's great. I loved it. And she just kept stabbing her and stabbing her, even when she didn't need to stab her, just to make sure, you know? And then she's smart because then she stabs her brain.
Yeah. And then
stands.
And then Ron is in the background and sees all this.
And realizes, oh my gosh, either my mom is a badass or my mom's crazy. Or like, wow, I need to learn how to do that, basically, because he sucks. And his mom
sucks at everything.
Maybe this time Ron will understand Jesse because, you know, she's trying to help them. She saved his life. Whether you like it or not, she saved his life.
Yeah, people left and right are protecting themselves. Carl shot the guy. You know, his mom is doing this. Like, wake up, dude. You know, what are you doing?
Wake up and smell the roses.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Or just look at the flowers and Carol will shoot you.
So what do you think of the scene where Carol is using Morgan as a decoy? Like, she's pretending she's one of the wolves and carrying Morgan off as a prisoner.
That was smart. The whole thing of Carol dressing up as a wolf is very smart, first of all. And two, I thought it was so cool how she used him as, like, a decoy. And it worked! It actually worked!
Yeah, because she walked up... She walked up to like about four wolves and they're like, hey, how's it going? You know,
like, good job. Getting
good job.
A prisoner.
Yeah.
And she shoots them.
Yeah. Which is brilliant.
And then there's a scene where Gabriel's getting attacked and Carol's like yells at him to leave him.
And then Morgan, of course, refuses.
Doesn't. I didn't even know it was Morgan that was getting attacked. I thought it was just another Alexandrian and Carol's just like, leave that crap. Person, they don't need help. I'm like, damn, you know. And but it's Gabriel, and Morgan's like, no, I have to go do it. And she's like, oh my gosh, and does her own thing. So Morgan gets the guy to be knocked out and is tying him up with Gabriel, and Gabriel and Morgan have this moment like, we all both understand we don't have to kill them, and we continue on the journey.
Gabriel asks Morgan, you know, where did you learn how to do that? And Morgan says, from a cheesemaker.
He really could have been a cheesemaker, you know? I don't think that was a joke. I think that was real.
And if you remember in a past Talking Dead, there was the producers of the Walking Dead said that, in this next season, there'll be an element of cheese involved.
Oh my God. I've totally forgot about that.
He says there's going to be a cheese component in this.
And there it is.
And there's
maybe we'll get more into it.
He says there'd be some cheese in this episode. And it's like, okay, well, there's your cheese.
Oh my gosh.
So there's the cheese. Walking Dead has more cheese. So it was a cheesemaker, and
I think we'll learn more about this.
I don't know, maybe. Maybe.
I want to get a flashback.
Of Morgan learning the ways.
From the cheesemaker.
Being mentored by this cheesemaker. That's interesting. So the wolf says, we're freeing you. You're trapped. You need to know. People don't belong here anymore.
Weird.
I think it's basically saying that people don't belong on this earth anymore. And
or like,
we're freeing you. You're trapped from this bondage of being human. You need to be a wolf.
Yeah.
Because they're wolves. They think they're wolves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're freeing you. Your animals just like us, kind of thing.
So don't try to be human.
Yeah.
Get back to
this past reality.
Mm-hmm. There's a new reality and we're all animals.
Mm-hmm. And before he can finish anymore, Carol just shoots him in the head straight up. And I love it. I love it. It's so funny. At first I was a little upset. I'm like, really? But then I'm like, whatever. It doesn't matter. He needs to be dead.
You're not going to learn more. Maybe you can find out if there's a leader, if there's some other person that's leading them, or are they just a pack? With no leader, I don't know. And then Morgan gives Gabriel the guns, and then Gabriel says, "I'm not good with guns." Morgan says, "I'm not either."
Me either. But now Gabriel has two guns. He doesn't know what to do with it. So funny. That was a good scene.
Yeah, give guns to the person who doesn't know how to use a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And
then the next scene, we actually get to see what's up with Rosita and Aaron, and. Like in the video we were watching, that we see that Aaron actually understands what's going on and gets it. And I think he's the only Alexandrian that actually picked up a gun and is, besides Jesse, that is fighting back.
Well, because he's been out there, right? He had to go out and search for people. So he's been
out
there.
Yeah, and he agrees with the group because he's the one that wanted the group there in the first place.
Yeah,
so
and he hangs out with Daryl. He hangs out with Daryl. And
Exactly. And, you know, he gets the job done.
Yeah. So we see also a scene with Carol where, like you said, she's camouflaged and she shoots a bunch of wolves. She runs out of bullets. So she runs into the armory and a guy comes in there. He shoots. Man, Carol is like, I'm telling you.
Ruthless.
She is awesome.
No hesitation.
Like, she gets chased into the armory. They have a little thing and Carol grabs a gun, blows the girl away. And then she gets the automatic, shoots the guy in the back, and she's checking, oh, there's blood, so he's fine, he's dead. They find someone in the closet, which is Olivia, which is the...
She lives in that pantry, dude.
The pantry keeper.
Exactly, she's the pantry keeper. She's like that little person that when you're like playing video games and you're going on quests, that you always come back to her to restock.
Yeah, there's always a person there waiting.
She's that person.
And then basically gives her a gun and say, you know, if anybody walks in the door, shoot them.
Basically, this is how you use a gun. Shoot him.
Hopefully, it won't be anybody.
She's the only
important
person that knows her true identity now. Carol's true identity. Like, what the heck are you doing?
That's true. That's true.
Because at this point, Carol's like, oh, I never needed to learn how to use a gun, you know?
Yeah.
Now she's like super like wolved out. Here's how to use a gun, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
there we go.
So someone does know her now. So we thought that, oh, nobody knows her, but actually someone does know her.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, somebody walks into that pantry and gets blown away. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So we have another audio clip with Morgan.
Morgan talking to the wolves.
You. You live here?
Leave. My people have guns. Yours don't. They may be aiming right at you right now. Eyes are the scopes. Fingers on the trigger. Boom. It's gonna happen any second now unless you get the hell out of here and you don't ever come back. You keep choosing this life, you will die.
We didn't choose.
Interesting. I like how, first of all, Morgan says, my group, so he feels like he's part of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he also is warning them that, look, there are people out there who are not going to be like me. You know, there are people out there that are not like me. And that at any moment you can die, even now. Even though I know, like, no one's looking at them right now with the gun. But
he was bluffing them.
A little bluffing there. But he did that because why does he want to help them?
He's not helping them. Well, yeah, he is. I guess because he thinks life is precious and he's trying to change them. These are people that cannot be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what they were doing. I mean,
exactly. You can't come back from that.
You think you could change someone from that?
No.
And it backfires on him because the guy walks away and he picks up a gun.
Exactly. Strike number one of out of a million, so you need to kill people before they kill you.
They came without guns and now Morgan armed them with one gun.
Again, another turning point for Morgan, I hope, that, maybe my method isn't all that great.
Yeah, because that guy with a gun, he's going to kill someone that we care about. Obviously.
Exactly. And he's gonna feel like crap.
Don't forget, the group is still out there. What if they run across him?
Exactly.
So what if he shoots Rick?
No, please. Whatever. No one can shoot Rick. He's invincible. Yeah, and then I like how they say you live here, like they know him.
Yeah, because that's the guy who confronted Morgan in the forest.
No.
It was him and the other guy.
Yeah.
And one other guy.
Yeah.
That's how they know him. So here we see Carol walking over to Shelly's dead body.
It's towards the end. I think they've killed all the wolves. Now they're kind of just doing cleanup
mm-hmm.
and recovery. And
there's still some wolves hiding around.
Yeah, inside houses and stuff.
Yeah.
She takes the cigarettes and she's like hesitates because she's about to, like we talked about this, she wants to smoke, but then she doesn't. Sees the A on the banister and, you know, basically tries to rub the W off her forehead, and she's so sick of killing. She's sick of it. It's getting to her, you know? Mm-hmm. Doing the right thing is getting to her, because she is now, she's questioning if it is the right thing. She knows she has to do it, but she doesn't like how it makes her feel.
Yeah, I think she definitely doesn't like what she's turning into, I think. We'll see what happens when Rick comes back, and I think she needs to talk to Rick. Or somebody. She needs to talk to somebody.
Yeah. Can't keep it all in.
Maybe Michonne is the right person.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because Morgan is not the right person.
Yeah.
Aaron finds his backpack with the photos, and it clicks. And so what do you think Aaron is feeling right now?
Aaron, like in the video that we were watching, that Aaron is like torn apart right now. He feels totally responsible for this attack, because he sees that they found the backpack and it has the pictures. And if anything, he thinks that this is all his fault. All these people died because of his carelessness.
Yeah, I mean, they found the photos, but they didn't know exactly where it was. But they knew that it existed, and there was something out there that they were striving to find. So they searched and searched until they found it. So Aaron is probably feeling super guilty, right?
Yeah, because they knew all the weak points. They knew what the place looked like, where to go, who to find. You know, not really who to find, but they had an idea. And so it helps them. Apparently, they felt confident enough to be able to attack. So they might have known more than they would have known if they didn't have those pictures.
Yeah, and also we kind of assume that there's a long time break. But I think that it's kind of a false sense of time, because, you know, we were gone for the summer and we think our actors are, the story is progressing during the summer, but it's not, right? It's
just, yeah.
So I think the time frame for everything is really short. So it's not like the wolves were waiting and planning. I mean, I'm sure there was some planning, but
not as long as we think.
Like, so the whole thing about Enid and a spy and all this stuff and conspiracy. No, the wolves just didn't find the place until now. And then once they found it, they attacked. Mm-hmm. I think that's all that happened. And of course, they needed this other stuff to happen in Alexandria on the store as part of the story.
Yeah.
They couldn't have the wolves attack sooner. I think the time that the wolves attacked was kind of perfect for the story, I think.
For the progress of the story, yeah.
Because, of course, all our main fighters, our warriors, are outside.
And we get to see the secondary characters actually try to come and do things now.
Yeah. So just when the place is the most vulnerable, right?
Yeah, we had a little growth now with our characters that don't usually get to see a lot of screen time.
So I think it was just a matter of time that the wolves just ended up at where they ended up. It's not, they just, you know, needed time to get there, basically. Because we saw signs of the wolves where, you know, Daryl and Aaron were going out and seeing weird things and stuff.
Yeah, so they knew they were out there.
Right, yeah.
They didn't know if they knew about Alexandria yet. That's what we didn't know.
And then we have this recapping where Spencer is talking to Rosita.
Well, before that, we have Dr. Dennis.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Dennis didn't get to save Holly, and she passes away. And, you know, she's just basically asking everyone to leave because she feels like a failure. And all Tara said was just make sure you get her brain. That's it.
I hope she did, because they didn't show it.
I know.
Because we don't want Holly to come back and eat Denise. And then Spencer's walking with Rosita, and she's like, how can she live knowing the world is like this? And which was a good response from Rosita.
Question.
Yeah, it is a good question, and that's kind of what our characters have been trying to figure out. How to live.
Well, then Rosita says, this group, Abraham, this place, make sure you got something worth dying for, you know? And I'm glad she said that to Spencer. It's like, you know, we live through it because we have each other to live for, you know? And you can't be selfish and a coward and always run away and protect only yourself, because at the end of the day, it doesn't keep you warm at night.
Yeah, and she's basically saying to Spencer, you know, I guess this, you know, doesn't this place mean anything to you? Like, doesn't, like, that
don't
you just...
care?
Don't you care that you can... Can't you, like, fight for it?
Like, aren't you willing to die for it?
Right, yeah.
Like, we are. Yeah. And, it's just something that the group has to think about. Not the Alexandrians have to think about their priorities, what's really important to them, and if they want to live, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that, if Rick hadn't show up to Alexandria, none of this would have happened, and the Alexandrians would have been living in peace. But I doubt that. I think the wolves were always out there, and the wolves would always eventually find...
It's inevitable that they would have found them.
Yeah, and it would have been a massacre, basically. Just like Noah's town, there was a massacre.
It would be exactly like Noah's town.
Yeah. So the fact that Rick had showed up and there were some of Rick's group there, at least saved part of the town. We'll have to find out in the next few episodes to see how much of Alexandria has actually left.
Imagine if the whole group was still there, like almost no one would die.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course. And Rick was telling them, you know, you need lookouts, you need people watching, you need everyone armed.
Yeah, now people are going to start believing Rick and listening to him. People are stubborn. You got to show them before you can really prove to them that you got to do what you got to do. So,
yeah. And Maggie says, you know, we're still here. And Deanna says, not all of us.
Exactly.
My husband's not here. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. My son's not here.
And most of us are dead.
A lot of people died, yeah.
And then we go over to Carl, who realizes that everything's okay, looking for Enid, and just sees her note, which explains the acronym, just survive somehow. She did say goodbye. She didn't say goodbye, but she said goodbye.
Yeah, when I was watching the Talking Dead episode, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I saw it. Okay. Yeah, I watched it.
Enid, the actress who played Enid, was on there, and she was saying that something important was that she never got to say goodbye to her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying that the reason she wanted to say goodbye to Carl was kind of a closure thing for her, because she never got to say goodbye to her parents. So she feels that if she said goodbye to Carl, that would make it easier and provide some closure with her parents. Like, oh, she said goodbye to somebody at least.
Yeah.
You know, so she never got to do that with her parents. So this was helping that. What do you think about that?
That's true. But then she didn't get to say goodbye, but she left a note. Do you think that still considered in her mind as a goodbye?
Yeah. Well, she tried to say goodbye, but Carl wouldn't let her. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carl, and so it's sad, but, you know, so do everyone makes choices.
So she thinks she went back to the wolves?
Oh, my. I don't think she went back to the wolves. Honestly, I don't know why she left, because now she's just going to be starving, smelly, and gross all the time. Isn't she used to nice showers and stuff?
You know Carl's going to go find her, right?
No.
He has
other responsibilities.
That's true. He has Judith. But I think if Rick comes back, he's going to tell Rick, look, Enid left. We got to go find her. And I think he's going to take Rick or somebody else, then they're going to go find Enid.
Mm-hmm. Unless he just respects her and just wants to...
Oh, no. And then he's going to go find Enid, and he's going to run into the wolves with a gun. The wolf guy with a gun.
Gosh.
Oh, man. That sucks. Anyway. I hope it doesn't happen, though. Mm-hmm. I hope Carl doesn't get hurt. I know he's kind of... I mean, he's not useless, but he's good. I mean, he's just grown so much. He's been on the show for so long. I want him to be like last for a while.
Exactly.
Till the end.
I want him to last till the end. I want him to be the sole survivor.
Yeah.
So then right after that, Carol's casserole goes off, and you know, Carl takes it out of the oven, and it's just a perfect parallel to what just happened. You know, crap happens, but we still go on.
Yeah, the food still cooks in the oven.
Food's ready. We're still standing. We're still here, you know?
Yeah, so how long did you put the timer for? Do you remember? Was it 45 minutes or something?
Yeah, 45 minutes. And that's how long it took.
How long it took for the whole battle to take place. And Carol basically took care of most of it.
Yeah, hello. And it's so funny that Carl does it. Like, he's so unfazed by what just happened.
Yeah. And then we have the final scene, which, almost the final scene, where Morgan's
killing a walker in the street. He goes into a house. He finds that a wolf is hiding there, attacks them, misses, and then they get to see each other and reveal that this is the guy Morgan let go back in the forest.
I got to say, first of all, that attack scene where the wolf misses and his machete thing hits the wall, that was kind of silly. I mean,
I don't even remember that.
Well, what happened was Morgan was walking down the hall, and then the guy swings and he jams his thing into the wall. Like, that was like a clear TV moment. Like, really? If someone was really attacking Morgan, he would get the thing and slice Morgan in half. He wouldn't, like, jam it into the wall. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was kind of a purposeful miss, just so that they can have the confrontation.
Exactly. They need to face each other.
Okay,
I will forgive them for that.
Okay. So then Morgan, of course, beats him up with a stick. But then, the wolf says to Morgan, "You can't, can you?"
Yeah, you can't kill.
And then, yeah, and then the wolf realizes that and says, "Okay, I got the upper hand now because this guy's a wuss."
Exactly, but then Morgan, you know, gets the upper hand again, and then says, "I'm sorry," and then smacks him. But there's debate even on the Talking Dead that did he actually kill him, because you didn't hear the sound of like galoshing, like sloshing they usually get when you kill somebody. So is he dead? But he said, "I'm sorry." Why would he say he's sorry if he doesn't, you know?
And so, why would Morgan, in the next scene, walk away and we show him walking alone?
Okay, see, this is the theory I had coming up. This is the moment where Morgan realized, "I screwed up and I should have killed him when I had the chance." And then realizes that maybe you do have to kill at least some people or some things in life. There's some things you can't escape from. And that cross where Morgan and Kara are passing by each other is basically them passing each other's ideas. While Carol's starting to think, maybe I don't need to kill everyone. And Morgan's starting to think, maybe I need to kill someone. More people.
So them, so Morgan and Carol crossing paths.
Crossing ideas.
Is there just, there are different thought processes crossing each other.
Crossing
the streams.
Exactly. And that's what it is.
Crossing the streams of thought.
Mm-hmm, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
Very poetic.
And also Morgan was carrying a little bag, this blue bag, and saying, "Oh, why do they throw these things in there? Like, why is he carrying this little blue bag?"
I don't know.
He's like,
the people going.
He's like, the eyeballs. Is this a lunch bag or something? What is that?
Who knows?
Or did he kill the guy and grab his eyeballs and shove them in the bag or something?
Oh my gosh, Dad. Oh my gosh.
See, people, I did kill him. No, but I mean, he could have knocked him out and tied him up. Okay, fine. He killed him. I think he killed him.
Thank you.
I think he killed him. So overall, I guess, liked it. I think I liked it.
I loved it. It was great.
I loved it. Yeah, we did. It was suspenseful. I mean, we saw some awesome Carol action. And the next episode, what's going to happen in the next one? We still have the walkers coming in.
I think we're going to have Rick getting back to the camp, back to Alexandria, and try to figure out what the heck's going on with the walkers.
So I saw a little clip of a preview for the next episode, and basically it showed Rick running. So this is a strange clip because it showed Rick running, and obviously he's running back to Alexandria, right? Mm-hmm. He's running on the street like super fast, as fast as he can. Apparently not as fast as Morgan.
Apparently. Unless,
man, Morgan got there.
Car or
maybe
something.
Maybe Morgan, well, Morgan has ninja skills, so.
He knows his way around. He knows how to navigate.
Yeah, he's swinging through the trees and stuff. I don't know, like Tarzan. We see a scene where Rick is running, and then he encounters some walkers. He kills them like no problem with a knife. Mm-hmm. But then he looks at his hand like he got hurt.
Yeah,
he got hurt while he killed a walker. So that kind of worries me. Mm-hmm. Like how hurt did he get? But his hand has been hurt before. Because
I think he'll be fine.
It was bandaged up and
stuff. Hopefully he won't lose it like in the comics, but that would suck. Even Robert Kirkman said that was a bad idea on his part to get rid of his hand. So hopefully they're not going to do that.
So let's get into our fan feedback.
Yeah, I want to do the voicemail first.
Yeah, let's do the voicemail and our first winner of the t-shirt. We have two t-shirt winners.
Yay!
I don't know what we'll call them winners, but basically... your chance, you can get a t-shirt if you call in and leave a voicemail. It could be based on a question we ask, or even if it's just your comment on the show. And if we play it on the air, you get a t-shirt. And it's up to us to pick who goes on the air. here, the first one is from Laura from Denver, and I'll play her clip.
This is Laura. I'm calling from Denver. I think it's kind of cool that you guys actually are on board with me. I do think Carol is a great character. She's totally devious and awesome, and you kind of have to keep an eye out for her like you had to with Shane. But yeah, she kind of freaks me out, and she's a little bit psycho, and she's a little too good at lying and kind of manipulating other people. So yeah, Carol is a cool character, but she's creeping me out quite a bit.
So what do you think of her opinion about Carol? I think we said in the previous episode that Carol is kind of like the devil on Rick's shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. And she's starting to creep me out too because of how well she's doing this whole deceiving thing and how well she's playing this character and then how well she kills people, you know? So yeah, I totally agree.
Because there was one scene in this episode where there was a guy hacking someone away and she just walks up behind him and points a gun at his forehead and just kills him. And she pauses there for a second or two.
Because like, I think that's just her taking in the fact that of what's going on. Like, either, I think it could be one of two things. Here I am killing another person, or here I am just kill this person who just hacked away this person, this other Alexandrian. I can't even deal with this.
Yeah, but she killed him in cold blood, basically, because it was from behind. The guy didn't even see it coming, and you know what I'm saying? It's kind of weird. I mean, I know there's no fairness in anything. Like
it's the unrightable wrong.
Yeah. She also has a prediction about who was blowing the horn, but she was wrong. I think everyone who predicted what the horn was wrong.
I think so.
Who would have thought it was just, you know, I mean, it was the wolves in the end. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't on purpose to get the walkers. I think it looks like it was an accident.
Yeah.
But I'll play with her prediction.
So here's my prediction. I don't think it's the wolves or Ron who's blowing the horn, but what about someone we haven't thought of lately? What if it's the three exiles that Deanna sent away from Alexandria? We haven't heard from them, but it could be that they've just been hanging around, biding their time, waiting for the perfect moment to take over the town again. So, that's my prediction. We'll see on Sunday if it's right. Thanks, guys. And can't wait to hear the next podcast.
So,
that is actually still a good theory. Not maybe for the truck, but for the future.
Yeah, we still don't know about them.
We just don't know about the three exiles. And maybe they paired up with the wolves. Who knows? But
I wouldn't be surprised if Deanna walks back into the Alexandria and looks at the wolves and says, oh, I recognize this guy. This is the guy we exiled. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
That could possibly happen.
So that could still have a play in this.
Right.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Next voice. So that's Laura, you'll
thank get, you, Laura. You get you. A free t-shirt. And I really liked your feedback. That was great. Great quality too.
We have email addresses, and we'll definitely contact you with the t-shirt. Our next winner is Rebecca from Ohio. Yay!
Woo! Hi, I'm Cookie Girl, and I want some cookies.
Wow, Dad, you've spread an epidemic.
I'm spreading the Cookie Boy epidemic. Cookie Boy has a girlfriend.
It's so funny.
But Rebecca makes a cool observation. And I'm going to play that for the audience.
This is Rebecca from Ohio. You guys are talking about how Rick had said to Morgan when they were in that room, I ask, you answer, common courtesy. And then Rick smiled. Well, what that was referring to, I don't think it was about what the wolf had said to Morgan. I think it referred back all the way to the pilot episode when Morgan took Rick in and was asking him if he was bit or if it was just a gunshot wound. When Rick didn't answer, Morgan had said to him, I ask, you answer, common courtesy. So I think that's what they're referring to.
Oh,
yeah.
I totally didn't even remember that.
So I actually I dug into my archives. I went into the Walking Dead closet we have here with all our archives of all past shows. And I dug out that clip, and I have it ready. So, want to take a listen?
Nice, yes.
Got that bandage changed now. It's pretty rank. What was the wound?
Gunshot.
Gunshot? What else? Anything?
Gunshot ain't enough.
Look, I ask, and you answer. It's common courtesy, right? Did you get bit?
Bit?
Bit. Chewed. Maybe scratched. Anything like that.
No, I got shot. Just shot, as far as I know.
So that was a flashback.
Oh, wow. That was so great. Oh, my goodness.
And that was the time when we're like, yeah, I mean, gunshots, that's bad, but no. Something even worse, getting bit by a walker.
Exactly. So that's really nice how Rick brought that back.
Yeah, he remembered that.
You know, and kind of made it towards him, like they're meeting each other for the first time again.
Right. And Rebecca has a prediction about the horn. Again, she was wrong, but that's okay. That's a hard one to get.
My prediction goes back to is Enid. She and Carl are becoming more of a focus. And in season 5, you know, Carl kind of inquired with Enid when they were out in the woods sitting by the tree log. And he was saying, Ron's a good guy. And she said, he is. And he asked, does he know you come out here? And she says, no, he wouldn't understand. Well, I hate to say it, but my prediction is it's Enid honking the horn. I think that somehow she is tied in with the wolves, probably has family members that are a part of that, and they have planted her. Thanks. And I really enjoy your podcast.
Yeah, so there's another Enid theory that she's with the wolves.
It would make sense if we didn't get the little history of Enid at the beginning of this episode. That's why.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of dismissed that kind of theory, but it's still a good theory. I mean, that'd be really sick and twisted. But yeah.
I think Enid is innocent. I know it's probably going to backfire on me, but I think Enid is innocent. I think.
Well, I think she's innocent too right now.
Yeah, I think she hasn't done anything to indicate that she's just confused and she's just scared and she's running away because that's her defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Rebecca, and you too will receive a t-shirt. Thank you.
Woo! And, congratulations!
We got all your info.
Sorry.
Hooray! yeah, so that's more special effects. Okay.
Yeah.
let's jump into some trivia.
Yes, we
had a lot of comments on Facebook. Facebook just blew up on this episode. I guess they just couldn't handle Morgan being so
such a sissy.
So kind, yeah. But we have one trivia, which I think you'll like, Jasmine. It's regarding Alexandra Breckenridge, who plays Jessie. And it's an interview she did on Entertainment Weekly.
Ooh.
And she talks about some of her acting skills. Do you want to read the first one?
Yeah. Tell me about the actual filming of the scene. What was that like?
And she's talking about the scene where she stabbed the attacker.
Of course. Yeah. That's the only scene we care about. It was a lot of fun. The physicality and the stunts we had to do were really fun. And the girl playing opposite me, she was just fantastic and such a pleasure to work with. Sometimes you have those moments when you're acting, when you have the chance to release some of your own inner demon. So in that moment, I realized I can release some of my own frustrations that will just make this scene so much more powerful. There's a lot of me coming out in that as well.
And then the next question said, did you fire yourself up by hitting walls or grunting things like Andrew Lincoln does before a take? What was your process? You want to read that?
For this scene specifically, I chose an insecure part of myself that I didn't want anymore. You know, like that part of yourself that tells you you're not good enough and makes you insecure in your life. And I chose that part. I chose that woman to represent that part of myself. So when I went in to stab her, I was trying to kill those demons in myself. It's always different for me. I choose different things depending on what the scene is. If that reality I can't connect to enough, I use something that will connect me like that. So it's always different. But for this specifically, that was a very powerful thing that I wanted to kill in myself. I think Jesse and I are both doing the same thing in that scene. We're both killing that side of ourselves.
So
that I guess kind of is like sense memory. If you want to talk about like different methods or whatever. Yeah, basically finding an objective and using it, because people love watching you go after what you want. That's what we learn in acting. Like, there's nothing to be ashamed of when you're going after something you want. Don't be afraid to show that side of you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And whether it is attacking something that, you know, again, like makes you feel insecure, or, you know, just finding an objective, connecting with it and pursuing it with 100% commitment. People will love that. You'll be magnetic because everyone wants to see you, wants to watch.
Yeah, so she took something from herself, an idea, and which doesn't have any physical manifestation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she put that on the attacker, so mm-hmm. that when she was attacking that person, she was actually attacking that thing that she didn't like about herself.
yeah,
and trying to kill it.
Exactly.
And for you, it just, when you're watching it, it just says like, oh, someone attacking someone else. But because it for Jessie or the actress, it felt real. She was actually,
it was real.
Yeah,
and,
it was
and
real.
That is true. And it's still true to the character, because the character, Jessie, is not only protecting her family and trying to protect self-defense, but also is releasing, you know, her feelings about this. Like, I need to do what I got to do.
Yeah, and also
I got to kill that weak part of myself that says I can't do this, and right, I have to do it.
Right. So that yeah, was kind of a good choice that she made as an actress to do that,
choices,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We also got one little funny email from Matt that says, the triangle of Rick, Shane, and Lori is the same as Carl, Ron, and Enid.
Oh, man, that's funny.
So
that's good.
Yeah. So there's a little, a teenage little triangle, a younger version of that triangle.
Hopefully it won't be as destructive.
I know, right? Oh, my goodness. We don't want Ron doing anything.
In the same way.
Oh, man, I don't want Ron doing something stupid. Please, Ron, don't. Don't go grab a gun and do something stupid. First of all, he doesn't even know how to use a gun, so.
Exactly.
Probably kill himself.
Exactly. Shoot himself in the foot or something. That'd be hilarious.
Okay, that's it. I can't wait for the next episode. What are you looking forward to? The walkers?
I'm just looking forward to seeing Rick deal with the walker situation again, and also his reaction to what happened in the town, and that Carol will be like, well, we took care of it. We're all good here.
I just think
casserole.
There's going to be a lot of touchy situations because the group is out there. They're kind of split up. There's the group that went to the trucking place, so they split
we
up.
We might spend the whole episode trying to for them to figure out how to get back.
Definitely.
I think so.
Yeah. I don't even think we're going to get to the... Well, maybe we might get to the walkers reaching Alexandria, but towards the end, maybe.
Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers, and you can always send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.